Bill slid behind the wheel of his truck. "Stay out of it, Mike," he said. "Stay away from Maddie DeVore and her daughter. And if you get called to court on account of seeing the two of them on Saturday, smile a lot and say as little as you can. Max DeVore is charging that she's unfit to raise the child." "Yeah." "Bill, I saw the child, and she's fine." He grinned again, but this time there was no amusement in it. "Imagine she is, but that's not the point. Stay clear of their business, old boy. It's my job to tell you that. With Joe gone, I guess I'm the only caretaker you got." He slammed the door of his Ram, started the engine, reached for the gear shift, then dropped his hand again as something else occurred to him. "If you get a chance, you ought to look for the owls." "What owls?" "There's a couple of plastic owls around here someplace. They might be in your basement or out in Joe's studio. They come in by mail order the fall before she passed on."
"The fall of 1993?
Aya, that can't be right. We hadn't used Sarah in the fall of 1993. "'Tis, though. I was down here putting on the storm doors when Joe showed up. We had us a natter, and then the UPS truck come. I lugged the box into the entry and had a coffee. I was still drinking it then, while she took the owls out of the cat and showed them off to me. Gorry, but they looked real. She left not 10 minutes after. It was like she'd come down to do that errand special, although why anyone would drive all the way from Derry to take delivery of a couple of plastic owls, I don't know."
"When in the fall was it, Bill? Do you remember?"
"Second week of November," he said promptly. "Me and the wife went up to Lewiston later that afternoon to vet sisters. It was her birthday. On our way back, we stopped at the Castle Rock Agway so Vet could get her Thanksgiving turkey."
He looked at me curiously.
"You really didn't know about them owls?"
"No."
"That's a touch peculiar, wouldn't you say?"
"Maybe she told me and I forgot," I said. "I guess it doesn't matter much now in any case." Yet it seemed to matter. It was a small thing, but it seemed to matter. Why would Joe want a couple of plastic owls to begin with?
"To keep the crows from shitting up the woodwork, like they're doing out on your deck. Crows see those plastic owls, they veer off."
I burst out laughing in spite of my puzzlement, or perhaps because of it.
"Yeah? That really works?"
"Yeah, long as you move them every now and then so's the crows don't get suspicious. Crows are just about the smartest birds going, you know. You look for those owls. Save yourself a lot of mess."
"I will," I said. Plastic owls to scare the crows away. It was exactly the sort of knowledge Joe would come by. She was like a crow herself in that way, picking up glittery pieces of information that happened to catch her interest, and act upon without bothering to tell me. All at once, I was lonely for her again, missing her like hell.
"Good. I'll be down later this week when I've got more time, and we'll walk the place all the way around. Woods, too, if you want. I think you'll be satisfied."
"I'm sure I will. Where's DeVore staying?"
The bushy eyebrows went up.
"Warrington's. Him and you's practically neighbors. I thought you must know."
I remembered the white-haired woman I'd seen, black bathing suit top and black shorts somehow combining to give her an exotic cocktail party look, and nodded. "I think I met his wife."
Bill laughed heartily enough at that to feel in need of his handkerchief. He fished it off the dashboard, a blue paisley thing the size of a football pennant, and wiped his eyes.
"What's so funny?" I asked.
"Skinny woman, white hair, looks sort of like that picture of a fella running across a bridge and yowling his head off."
It was my turn to laugh.
"That's her."
Yeah, but she's not his wife. His wife's been dead 20 years. She's his, personal assistant. Roguette Whitmore is her name."
He pronounced it Roguette with a hard G.
"What kind of name is that? French?"
"California," he said, and shrugged as if that one word explained everything. "There's people in town scared of her."
"Is that so?"
"Yeah."
Bill hesitated, then added with one of those smiles we put on when we want others to know that we know we're saying something silly,
"Bertha Meserve says she's a witch."
And they've been staying at Warrington's almost a year? DeVore's elder son must be minding the store, huh? The Whitmore woman only joined him for good last month, Bill said. Thinking in town is that she'll stay until the custody business is finished off, and then they'll all go back to California on DeVore's private jet. Leave Osgood to sell Warrington's and... Sell it? What do you mean, sell it? I thought you must know, Bill said, dropping his gear shift into drive. When old Hugh Emerson told DeVore they closed the lodge after Thanksgiving, DeVore told him he had no intention of moving, said he was comfortable right where he was and meant to stay put. He bought the place. I had been by turns surprised, amused, and angered over the last 20 minutes, but never exactly dumbfounded. Now I was. He bought Warrington's lodge so we wouldn't have to move to Lookout Rock Hotel over in Castle View or rent a house. Yeah, so he did. 9 buildings, including the main lodge and the Sunset Bar. 12 acres of woods, a 6-hole golf course, and 500 feet of shorefront along the street, plus a 2-lane bowling alley and a softball field. $4.25 million. His friend Osgood did the deal, and DeVore paid with a personal check. I wonder how he found room for all those zeros. I'll see you, Mike. With that, he backed up the driveway, leaving me to stand on the stoop, looking after him with my mouth open. Plastic owls. Bill had told me roughly 24 interesting things in between peeks at his watch, but the one which stayed on top of the pile was the fact, and I did accept it as a fact, he had been too positive for me not to, that Joe had come down here to take delivery on a couple of plastic goddamn owls. Had she told me? She might have. I didn't remember her doing so, and it seemed to me that I would have. But Joe used to claim that when I got into the zone, it was no good to tell me anything. Stuff went in one ear and out the other. Sometimes she'd pin little notes, errands to run, calls to make, to my shirt, as if I were a first grader. But wouldn't I recall if she'd said, "I'm going down to Sarah, hon. UPS is delivering something I want to receive personally. Interested in keeping a lady company?" Hell, wouldn't I have gone? I always liked an excuse to go to the TR. Except I'd been writing those stories, trying to put together a collection and maybe pushing it a little. Notes pinned to the sleeve of my shirt. "If you go out when you're finished, we need milk and orange juice." I inspected what little was left of Joe's vegetable garden, with July sun beating down on my neck, and thought about the owls, the plastic goddamn owls. Suppose Joe had told me she was coming down here, to Sarah laughs. Suppose I had declined almost without hearing the offer because I was in the writing zone. Even if you granted those things, there was another question. Why had she felt the need to come down here personally, when she could have just called someone and asked them to meet the delivery truck? Kenny Oster would have been happy to do it. Ditto Mrs. M. And Bill Dean, our caretaker, had actually been here. This led to other questions. One was why she hadn't just had UPS deliver the damn things to Derry. And finally, I decided I couldn't live without actually seeing a bona fide plastic owl for myself. Maybe, I thought, going back to the house, I'd put one on the roof of my Chevy when it was parked in the driveway, forestall future bombing runs. I paused in the entry, struck by a sudden idea, and called Ward Hankins, the guy in Waterville who handles my taxes and my few non-writing-related business affairs. "Mike," he said heartily, "how's the lake?" "The lake's cool and the weather's hot, just the way we like it," I said. "Ward, you keep all the records we send you for 5 years, don't you, just in case IRS decides to give us some grief?" "5 is accepted practice," he said, "but I hold your stuff for 7. In the eyes of the tax boys, you're a mighty fat pigeon." Better a fat pigeon than a plastic owl, I thought, but didn't say. What I said was, "That includes desk calendars, right? Mine and Joe's up until she died?" "You bet. Since neither of you kept diaries, it was the best way to cross-reference receipts and claimed expenses with..." "Could you find Joe's desk calendar for 1993 and see what she had going in the second week of November?" "I'd be happy to. What in particular are you looking for?" For a moment, I saw myself sitting at my kitchen table in Derry on my first night as a widower, holding up a box with the words Norco Home Pregnancy Test printed on the side. Exactly what was I looking for at this late date? Considering that I had loved the lady and she was almost 4 years in her grave, what was I looking for? Besides trouble, that was. I'm looking for 2 plastic owls, I said. Ward probably thought I was talking to him, but I'm not sure I was. I know that sounds weird, but it's what I'm doing. Can you call me back? Within the hour. Good man, I said, and hung up. Now for the actual owls themselves. What was the most likely spot to store 2 such interesting artifacts? My eyes went to the cellar door. Elementary, my dear Watson. The cellar stairs were dark and mildly dank. As I stood on the landing, groping for the light switch, the door banged shut behind me with such force that I cried out in surprise. There was no breeze, no draft. The day was perfectly still, but the door banged shut just the same, or was sucked shut. I stood in the dark at the top of the stairs, feeling for the light switch, smelling that oozy smell that even good concrete foundations get after a while, if there is no proper airing out. It was cold in here, much colder than it should have been, and much colder than it had been, when I stepped through from the kitchen. All at once, I was at Manderley again, which is only to say that I wasn't alone and knew it. I was afraid I'd be a liar to say I wasn't, but I was also fascinated. Something was with me. Something was with me. I dropped my hand away from the wall where the switch was and just stood with my arms at my sides. Some time passed, I don't know how much. My heart was beating furiously in my chest. I could feel it thudding in my temples. It was cold. "Hello?" I asked. Nothing in response. I could hear the faint, irregular drip of water as condensation fell from one of the pipes down below. I could hear my own breathing, and faintly, far away in another world where the sun was out, I could hear the triumphant caw of a crow. Perhaps it had just dropped a load on the hood of my car. I really need an owl, I thought. In fact, I don't know how I ever got along without one. Hello, I asked again. Can you talk? Nothing. I wet my lips. I should have felt silly, perhaps, standing there in the dark and calling to the ghosts, but I didn't. Not a bit. The damp had been replaced by a coldness I could feel, and I had company. Oh, yes. Can you tap, then? If you can shut the door, you must be able to tap. I stood there and listened to the soft, isolated drips from the pipes. There was nothing else. I was reaching out for the light switch again when there was a soft thud from not far below me. The cellar of Sarah Laughs is high, and the upper 3 feet of the concrete, the part which lies against the ground's frost belt, had been insulated with big silver-backed panels of InsuGuard. The sound that I heard was, I am quite sure, a fist striking against one of these. Just a fist hitting a square of insulation, but every gut and muscle of my body seemed to come unwound. I can hardly believe I didn't load my pants. My hair stood up. My eye socket seemed to be expanding, and my eyeballs contracting as if my head were trying to turn into a skull. Every inch of my skin broke out in goose flesh. Something was in here with me, something dead. I could no longer have turned on the light if I wanted to. I no longer had the strength to raise my arm. I tried to talk, and at first I couldn't raise a voice either. At last, in a husky whisper I hardly recognized, I said, "Are you there? Really there?" Thud. "Who are you?" I could still do no better than that husky whisper, the voice of a man giving last instructions to his family as he lies on his deathbed. This time there was nothing from below. I tried to think, and what came to my struggling mind was Tony Curtis as Harry Houdini in some old movie. According to the film, Houdini had been the Diogenes of the Ouija board circuit, a guy who spent his spare time just looking for an honest medium. He'd attended one seance where the dead communicated by... "Tap once for yes, twice for no," I said. "Can you do that?" Thud. It was on the stairs below me, but not too far below. 5 steps down, 6 or 7 at the most. Not quite close enough to touch if I should reach out and wave my hand in the black basement air. A thing I could imagine, but not actually imagine doing. "Are you?" My voice trailed off. There was simply no strength in my diaphragm. Chilly air lay on my chest like a flat iron. I gathered all my will and tried again. "Are you Joe?" Thud. That soft fist on the insulation. A pause, and then thud, thud. Yes and no. Then, with no idea why I was asking such an inane question, "Are the owls down here?" Thud, thud. "Do you know where they are?" Thud. "Should I look for them?" Thud. Very hard. Hot fingers touched my eyes, and I almost screamed before realizing it was sweat. I raised my cold hands in the dark and wiped the heels of them up my face to the hairline. They skidded as if in oil. Cold or not, I was all but bathing in my own sweat. "Are you Lance DeVore?" Thud, thud. At once. No. "Is it safe for me at Sarah? Am I safe?" Thud. A pause, and I knew it was a pause, that the thing on the stairs wasn't finished. Then, thud, thud. Yes, I was safe. No, I wasn't safe. An idea came to me then. I wasn't alone, that much was true, but it wasn't a ghost talking to me any more than the spirits of the dead had ever spoken to Harry Houdini. This was some trick of DeVore's, maybe even some new computer program he'd worked up. Call it ghost thumping. Part of my mind knew that wasn't true. The temperature on the landing seemed to have dropped 20 degrees, and I was shivering. But the other part was sure it was. I had regained control of my arm. I reached out, felt along the wall, and at last found the light switch. I settled my fingers on it. Now the sweat on my face felt as if it were turning to ice. "Are you the person who cries in the night?" I asked. Thud, thud from below me, and between the two thuds I flicked the switch. The cellar globes came on. So did a brilliant hanging bulb, at least 125 watts, over the landing. There was no time for anyone to hide, let alone get away, and no one there to try either. Also, Mrs. Meserve, admirable in so many ways, had neglected to sweep the cellar stairs. When I went down 5 risers to where I estimated the thudding sounds had been coming from, I left heel smudges in the light dust, but mine were the only marks. I blew out breath in front of me and could see it, so it had been cold, still was cold, but it was warming up fast. I blew out another breath and could see just a hint of fog. A third exhale, and there was nothing. I ran my palm over one of the insulated squares. Smooth. I pushed a finger at it, and although I didn't push with any real force, my finger left a dimple in the silvery surface, easy as pie. If someone had been thumping a fist down here, this stuff should be pitted, the thin silver skin perhaps even broken to reveal the pink fill underneath. But all the squares were smooth. "Are you still there?" I asked. No response, and yet I had a sense that my visitor was still there, somewhere. "I hope I didn't offend you by turning on the light," I said, and now I did feel slightly weird, standing a quarter of the way down my cellar stairs, talking out loud, sermonizing to the spiders. I wanted to see you if I could. I had no idea if that was true or not. Suddenly, so suddenly I almost lost my balance and tumbled down the stairs, I whirled around, convinced the shroud creature was behind me, that it had been the thing knocking. It, no polite M.R. James ghost, but a horror which had come out of the ground like a stinking tooth out of a putrid gum. There was nothing. I turned around again, took two or three deep, steadying breaths, and then went the rest of the way down the cellar stairs. Beneath them was a perfectly serviceable kayak, complete with jolly red paddle. In the corner was the gas stove we'd replaced with an electric range after buying the place. Also the clawfoot tub Joe had wanted, over my objections, to turn into a planter. I found a trunk filled with table linen I remembered from the 70s, a group of mildewy 8-track tapes from the same decade, groups like Parliament, Funkadelic, and 38 Special, several cartons of old dishes. There was a life down here, but ultimately not a very interesting one. Unlike the life I'd sensed in Joe's studio, this one hadn't been cut short, but evolved out of, shed like old skin, and that was all right. Was, in fact, the natural order of things. There was a photo album on a shelf of knickknacks, mostly Joe's short-lived efforts at ceramics, a craft for which she'd simply had no touch, and I took it down, both curious and wary. No bombs this time, however. Nearly all the pics were landscape shots of Sarah Laughs, as it had been when we bought it. I found a picture of Joe in bell-bottoms, though, her hair parted in the middle and white lipstick on her mouth, and one of Michael Noonan wearing a flowered shirt and mutton-chop sideburns that made the current me cringe. The Mike Noonan in the photo was a Barry White kind of guy I didn't want to recognize and yet did. I found Joe's old broken treadmill, a rake I'd want if I was still around here come fall, a snowblower I'd want even more if I was around come winter, and several cans of paint. What I didn't find were any plastic owls. My insulation-thumping pal had been right. Upstairs, the telephone started ringing. I hurried to answer it, going out through the cellar door and then reaching back in to flick off the light switch. This amused me and at the same time seemed like perfectly normal behavior, just as being careful not to step on sidewalk cracks had seemed like perfectly normal behavior to me when I was a kid. And even if it wasn't normal, what did it matter? I'd only been back at Sarah for 3 days, but already I'd postulated Noonan's first law of eccentricity. When you're on your own, strange behavior really doesn't seem strange at all. I snagged the cordless. Hello? Hi, Mike. It's Ward. That was quick. The file room's just a short walk down the hall, he said, easy as pie. There's only one thing on Joe's calendar for the second week of November in 1993. It says SKs of Maine, Freep, 11 a.m. That's on Tuesday the 13th. Does it help? Yes, I said. Thank you, Ward. It helps a lot. I broke the connection and put the phone back in its cradle. Yes, it helped. SKs of Maine was Soup Kitchens of Maine. Joe had been on their board of directors from 1992 until her death. Freep was Freeport. It must have been a board meeting. They had probably discussed plans for feeding the homeless on Thanksgiving, and then Joe had driven the 70 or so miles to the TR in order to take delivery of 2 plastic owls. It didn't answer all the questions, but aren't there always questions in the wake of a loved one's death, and no statute of limitations on when they come up? The UFO voice spoke up then. While you're right here by the phone, it said, why not call Bonnie Mudson? Say hi. See how she's doing. Joe had been on 4 different boards during the 90s, all of them doing charitable work. Her friend Bonnie had persuaded her onto the Soup Kitchens board when a seat fell vacant. They had gone to a lot of the meetings together. Not the one in November of 1993, presumably. And Bonnie could hardly be expected to remember that one particular meeting almost 5 years later. But if she saved her old minutes of the meeting sheets... Exactly what the fuck was I thinking of? Calling Bonnie, making nice, then asking her to check her December minutes? Was I going to ask her if the attendance report had my wife absent from the November meeting? Was I going to ask if maybe Joe had seemed different that last year of her life? And when Bonnie asked me why I wanted to know, what would I say? Give me that, Joe had snarled in my dream of her. In that dream, she hadn't looked like Joe at all. She'd looked like some other woman, maybe like the one in the book of Proverbs, the strange woman whose lips were as honey, but whose heart was full of gall and wormwood. A strange woman with fingers as cold as twigs after a frost. Give me that. It's my dust catcher. I went to the cellar door and touched the knob. I turned it, then let it go. I didn't want to look down there into the dark. Didn't want to risk the chance that something might start thumping again. It was better to leave that door shut. What I wanted was something cold to drink. I went into the kitchen, reached for the fridge door, then stopped. The magnets were back in a circle again, but this time four letters and one number had been pulled into the center and lined up there. They spelled a single lowercase word. Hello. There was something here. Even back in broad daylight, I had no doubt of that. I'd asked if it was safe for me to be here and had received a mixed message, but that didn't matter. If I left Sarah now, there was nowhere to go. I had a key to the house in Derry, but matters had to be resolved here. I knew that, too. Hello, I said, and opened the fridge to get a soda. Whoever or whatever you are, hello.